Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth every Tuesday at noon on KVSH 101.9 FM and on voiceofashon.org at your convenience. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and so happy that you're joining me today. Today, we get an inside look at what it's like to be a playwright in Hollywood, where movies reign. Joining me for that exploration is Wendy Graff, an award-winning playwright whose plays have been produced throughout the country and internationally. Her plays include Exit Wounds, which earned a Gold Medallion First Place Award from the Moss Hart and Kitty Carlisle New Play Initiative, Unemployed Elephants, a love story, an LA Times Pick of the Week with multiple Critics' Choice recommendations, Please Don't Ask About Beckett, described in the LA Times as an emotionally astute drama that peels away layers of pathology with surgical skill, and All-American Girl, another LA Times Pick of the Week. The list goes on, but I'd rather hear from the individual who creates all these flights into human nature. Welcome, Wendy Graff.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy that you are here. Full disclosure, Wendy and I met in a Zoom Pilates class, and we've been doing Pilates together for a year, and I didn't know until a week or so ago that she was a playwright. So I'm so happy to have you here and to discover what an incredible talent you are.
Oh, well, thanks.
So, Wendy, where do all these stories come from?
They come from different places. You know, when I first started out as a playwright, and I was actually a television and film writer before that. And we won't go into that because it's not a very interesting story. But, you know, when you first start writing plays, you know, they tend to come from your own life. You know, there's the inevitable stepmother story, and there's the inevitable, I've come to the point in my life where I've discovered religion story, you know, and all those. And those were all, you know, straight out of my life. So then things, you know, things tend to evolve. You only have so many stories of your life unless you're like a fascinating person. Like, for example, I've been watching the Ernest Hemingway bio, and he certainly had a lot of stories in him, but I unfortunately did not have that many in me. But a lot of them came out of travel, because I've been very widely traveled. Like Unemployed Elephants came out of my trip to Myanmar. And I have another play, All-American Girl. Some of that came out of a trip from India. And then I have another play called Behind the Gates that's based on a trip to Israel. And then ultimately, the stories come from my anger and indignance of injustice in the world. And, you know, my later plays weave in, you know, what I want to say about certain aspects of the world and characters and all that. I think everything kind of comes back in terms of theme to family, coming of age, identity, but, you know, all these different lenses play into the story. You know, and I still, you know, I pick and choose this and that from my own life.
And it seems as though your anger and your ire would come in your travels from observing the how personal, how individual lives are affected by cultural norms or cultural mores or cultural inequities. And how do you find those characters? Did you actually meet people who were affected by these cultural clashes? Or did you create them to fit the message?
Sometimes I met them, which gave me, you know, informed my what I was going to write about. Here's an example. Behind the Gates is about an American teenager who is having, you know, her parents are having terrible trouble with her. She's completely incorrigible, you know, and, you know, she's into sex, drugs, and rock and roll and ditching school and everything. The parents don't know what to do. And the therapist says you should send her to Israel for the summer, and you know, they'll straighten her out there. And so against her will, she's sent to Israel. And the play opens with a 25-minute monologue, how she evolves into this punk, you know, blue-haired, angry teenager into an ultra-Orthodox girl, because she's looking for the relief of absolutes. She's looking for someone to tell her what to do, and so she doesn't have to make any decisions. And she falls in with, there are rabbis at times in Israel who come up to vulnerable looking people at the wall and saying, do you have a place to go for Shabbos dinner? And they sort of bring them in to the community, and it feels good for these kids. And so then she evolves, you know, her whole appearance and everything changes throughout the monologue, you know, with all their rules. You have to wear skirts, and they have to, you know, so she takes off the makeup, and she takes the color, you know, the pierces out and all this. And so by the end of the monologue, she's gone into the mikveh, and she has been transformed into a kosher girl. The play picks up 18 months later, where the parents come to Israel because she's disappeared.
Oh.
And and the rest of the play is their search for her, which becomes a search for themselves. But when I was in Israel, you know, I tend to look at people. I look at people in the restaurants. I look at people in the hotels. I look at, you know, what's going on, sitting around the pool. I look at all this. And, you know, I started to get an idea of what was going on there in some parts of the society. And the play asks some very, very hard questions about the ultra-Orthodox in Israel. And so that's how I sort of tie it in. When I was in Myanmar, you know, I absorbed the whole culture. And that was while all the bad stuff was brewing under the surface, and I could feel it. I could feel it wherever I was.
You could feel the growth of the military dominance?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And then I'd have guides who would get into the conversations with me, and they would tell me what was going on and everything. So that's how I got, like, from these other cultures.
So if I were to go back to the plot of Behind the Gates, you did say your plays tend to deliver messages. And when I hear you describing that plot, the message I hear is, yes, people who don't want to make the rules for themselves don't ever get to be themselves. Would that be an accurate understanding of what you're trying to communicate?
I think it was more a search for identity. Who am I? And it was, who am I of the girl? And it was, who am I of the parents? Because once they got to Israel and they started searching for her with a private investigator, and some real questions came up with who they were. So it's really a who am I play. What is my identity? And how can I put together the things that I love about Judaism and the culture of Israel without swallowing the whole thing? You know.
What kind of pushback do you get? Have you gotten pushback?
Oh, God, that was my favorite. I got the most pushback on that. I had people like run after me after the after the performance, and you know, go up to me in the street, and then, you know, how dare you do all this kind of thing? And we had many, many talkbacks. We had talkbacks with the whole, you know, members of the Muslim community, with members of the Jewish community, with rabbis, with, you know, members of the Muslim Affair Council. And then it went on and it had a production in Tampa, Florida. And I was just speaking recently to one of the cast members in Tampa, Florida, who I stayed friendly with, you know, some of them. And they went on to do other things in other theaters and open their own theaters, you know, so we all stay connected and everything. And they said, did we ever tell you about those talkbacks we had after that production? And I was like, no. And they said, sometimes we were there for like 2.5 hours and people would scream at us and we would say, we're just the actors.
And you're the one who's responsible for what the actors were saying.
Yes, and I was so sad not to have been there because, if I can make people think and I can provoke that kind of emotion in them, then I'm really successful as a playwright. Joe Papp always said in his biography, and he'd always say, if I didn't have at least 5 people walk out during a performance, I haven't done my job.
Does that make your work more attractive in a town like Los Angeles? That sort of controversy that you might stimulate?
That's painting things with an awfully broad brush. The theater community in Los Angeles, as it is with throughout the whole country, really, is everyone has different goals and objectives. I mean, there's a lot of theaters that just want to, and I'm not saying this about Los Angeles, but I'm saying throughout the country, there are some, every theater is looking for different things. They have different subscriber bases. And there's some theaters that don't think that their subscribers will come if you do something controversial. Now, this is a play that they wanted to produce in Toronto, and they have a very big Jewish community in Toronto, and they loved the play, but they wanted me to change the ending because what happens is the woman in the ultra-Orthodox community who saves this girl and gets her out is, in the end, she's beaten by a mob.
Oh.
And I did a lot of research on it, and it happens to be true. And in the ultra-Orthodox communities, Friday nights are the biggest nights of the Sabbath. It's the biggest nights of abuse toward women and abuse toward their wives because, you know, for a lot of reasons. And I wrote this in 2011, but there's been a growing movement for women's shelters for the Orthodox community. I mean, I don't know if people saw Unorthodox, that show that was on Netflix.
Oh yes, I did.
Yeah, okay. Well, you could see some of the things that had gone on. And so the theater in Toronto said to me, we really like the play, but our subscribers will not stand for that ending. You know, and I said, but that's the true ending. And they said, well, can't you make it whatever? You know, and I said, look, no, I can't. What you say to an artist is, if you like the painting, you buy it. You don't ask the artist to change the colors to match their bedroom.
So true. So did they stage the play in Toronto?
No, I wouldn't agree to it. They only would do it if I made those changes, and I said I won't do it.
So I want to ask you about another of, I think maybe your upcoming plays, Ashonda.
I loved it, Ashonda. They did a beautiful staged reading series. They do it every year, the Road Theater in North Hollywood. And we did a beautiful produced staged reading of it in summer of 2019. And then a theater in Washington, D.C. that did another play of mine, No Word in Guyanese for Me, which is about how a Muslim immigrant struggles to reconcile her faith and her sexuality. It was Rainbow Theater Project, and they did a beautiful production of No Word in Guyanese for Me. It's probably my most produced play. And they did it in conjunction with the Women Voices Theater Festival in DC. And we went, and it was just beautiful. So I sent Ashonda to them, because Ashonda is about it's about an Orthodox Jew and a Southern Baptist both struggling to reconcile their faith and their sexuality in communities where homosexuality is not accepted.
So this is a gay couple?
Yes. Well, way, you know, in the closet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how they both had tried to fight it for so many years. The Jewish character was eased into an arranged marriage, because that's what the community felt that was the best way to deal with, you know, homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine what the fallout from that was.
Yeah.
And the Southern Baptist was sent to, you know, pray the gay away, you know, and both of them, you know, became, you know, got involved with drugs and everything, trying to not accept who they were. So it's another identity play. It's a arc of coming to your identity and, you know, your authenticity. But so Rainbow Theater Project was going to do it in April of last year, 2020, and then COVID shut it down. And it not only shut it down, but the theater shut down too, because they lost all their funding and everything. It was going to be its world premiere. And it's not an easy play to place, you know. So I really haven't had any action ever since then. So I'm my fingers crossed.
Yeah, it makes me wonder again about your process. And that is, did you, with that particular play, for instance, start with characters that you became aware of, or did you start with an overarching theme about the suppression of homosexuality and then seek the characters who would be in really extreme circumstances given the fundamentalism of Hasidic Jewishness and Southern Baptist philosophy?
It started out as a one act, and it was done a lot of times as a one act. And you know, I wrote it, I wrote it maybe, you know, 2015, 2016. And I had, you know, all the knowledge that I had gotten via, you know, my research and my everything for Behind the Gates, I already knew that in my head, you know. And so I was able to craft a character. There are two really good documentaries about that I had watched both of them when I did No Word in Guyanese for Me. Mm-hmm. That happens to be a woman, but there's Struggling Towards God is about how men and women have been rejected by the Hasidic community for being gay and how they tried to carve out a space for them. So that was part of my research. There is also another one called Jihad for Love that's the same thing in the Muslim community.
How much progress do you see since you've written these plays? How much, if any, progress do you see in these fundamentalist communities, Southern Baptists, Hasidic Jews, and the Muslim community, toward acceptance of homosexuality?
None.
So the play doesn't necessarily make that much difference, except perhaps to the people who see it. But it sounds as though what I see you doing is taking the personal and making it universal, or taking the universal and making it personal.
And that's exactly what I try to do. I mean, that's one of the old kind of adages of playwriting. I was very, very lucky. I don't know if you remember Gordon Davidson, the late Gordon Davidson, who was the artistic director of Center Theater Group for 36 years, you know, a Tony Award winning director, producer. He was my mentor. And when he retired from Center Theater Group, he directed my play, Lessons. And my whole relationship with him, I mean, for like 2 years, we were just, you know, I was just like a sponge with everything that he taught me. And he taught me so many things. He means so much to me. But that was one of the things that he taught me, that was the more specific you get, the more universal it is. And, you know, I've always tried to hold on to that. And I always try to make things very specific.
Well, you have obviously succeeded. You've obviously gotten that lesson. How many plays have you written that have been now produced and staged? Do you have the number in your head?
What does my resume say? I don't know. You know, it's hard to count them up. I mean, I would say 20 plus, you know, and some of them have been produced multiple times. And then I learn something new every time.
Yeah, each one, I'm sure, with a different cast, with a different time, takes on some new meaning. Yeah.
And then also, sometimes it gives you a chance to make up for your past mistakes. I had a play that was done here in L.A. in 2014 called Closely Related Keys.
Mm-hmm.
And it got mixed reviews. You know, some people really liked it, loved it. And then it got some questioning about some of the structural things. And I think that when we were in rehearsal, we went off on some tangents, you know, that you sometimes do, and included them in the play. And some of the reviews said, you know, it's a story about two sisters. And some of them said, I should have just stuck with the sisters. And then I got a second chance to rewrite it and, you know, and correct my past mistakes. And International City Theater in Long Beach, it was slated for last year's season, and it was going to be a big Equity production, and I was really excited about it. And it was also giving me the chance to redo the script and revisit it and take out this and put in that and all that. And then, you know, COVID came
along.
Yeah,
right. So for our listeners, the plot of Closely Related Keys is about an African-American attorney, a woman with a big career, who discovers that she has an Iraqi half-sister. Once
yes.
again, the theme of cultural clashes made right. personal. I hope that play gets produced.
Well, luckily, they put it back on the schedule for 2021, and it's supposed to open at the end of August. And hopefully we will be back in the theater by then. But if we're not, the first two plays on the season, she moved mine to the end because it has six characters. But her first two plays, Karen Desai, who's the artistic director, who's amazing. She's so great. She's been doing the first two virtually, and she's going to keep doing them virtually till she could get back in the theater. And we're just fingers crossed.
Yeah, so that brings me to a couple questions. One is, what innovations from the pandemic in theater do you think might continue? And what do you see as the future of theater post-pandemic?
I think Zoom or virtual, I think, honestly, and I've been involved with it now a lot. I think it's like until the real thing comes along. I mean, we had to do something. You know, playwrights have always, people have always put on plays. They put on plays in the ghettos. They put on plays in concentration camps. You know, they've always put on plays and had the need in their soul for theater. So, you know, so that's why we went to that. But it's just not the same.
Yeah, right. It's the campfire is so far away that it's hard to tell those stories.
And it's interesting that you say the campfire, because again, Gordon Davidson told me that the beginning of plays was telling a story, and the beginning of stories was sitting around the campfire and hearing the stories.
So do you have a person or a couple of people that you run a first draft by when you're creating a new play? Is there somebody?
Absolutely. I used to do it in writers groups, and that's helpful and not helpful, okay? Because it's helpful because you can, the thing that's important is hearing it.
Yes.
So what I've started to do in the last few years is that I invited, like before COVID, I invited like my go-to people. Like I have some, you know, I 5, 6, 7 go-to people who I really trust and I think are smart, and I love their work, and I read their work and they read my work. I'll have them over for lunch and have put together a cast and bring them over and give them lunch and say, read the play. And then we talk about it. Since COVID, I've done it a number of times with a Zoom reading.
Ah.
You know, just an informal one, not right. Showing it to anybody or anything. Yes, so definitely yes.
We are down to 1 minute left. Wendy Graf, playwright extraordinaire from Los Angeles. And my last question is, I understand you've worked as a private investigator.
I knew you were going to say that. All right, I'll get it into you very quickly. I've added in little elements, but I never really got into it. They were going to make a television show out of it a number of years ago. I had many meetings about it because I used to take my son in the stroller and surf process. So everybody thought I was just some lady on the street, and they liked it and they loved hearing about that. And when we got into the meetings, they were like, do we have to make her a mother? And then they say, can we make them, like, can there be 3 of them like Charlie's Angels? And I said, guys, I'm out. Good luck. See ya.
And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. That's Wendy Graf's take on artistic insistence. Wendy, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, dear listener, for joining me here on Real Talk. We're here every Tuesday at lunchtime, where curiosity chases truth. Thanks for listening.